With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today is Tuesday, July 2nd. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. Yes, we're here with Kevin, who has returned from parts unknown. Please listen to us anywhere you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, send us some posts. Take one of our messages, share it with your friends, try to get us out there, and join our Facebook page. Really important right now. Today on the show, summer doldrums have started. Our shows of sports potpourri are coming. Right now, the Mets are playing very well. Yankees trying to show some resilience with the trio of Judge and Soto and Cole. Aaron Judge, by the way, is on fire, total en fuego. NHL and NBA free agency has started. We got some soccer going on. We're going to start it with the NBA. Free agency started this week. And we saw, as Knicks fans, what we didn't want to see, which was Hartenstein signed with OKC. It's 3 years, $87 million. Knicks now need to get somebody in because we can't be counting on Mitchell Robinson to play a full schedule of games. He's never there all the time. Darren, let's start us off.
All right. Well, I mean, listen, the Knicks made the huge move last week with Bridges, and this week you knew it was going to happen. You knew Hartenstein was going to go, even if you kind of had that pipe dream that he was going to stay. They didn't have the rights for full bird rights with him, so they could not offer more than 17. OKC was able to outbid them. This kid's going to get one contract like this off of what he did last year, and he had to take it. You can't blame him. It sucks as a Knicks fan, but Hartenstein did what he had to do in this move. And you know what? Now you just got to find a serviceable big that you can sit there and put in rotation. And I don't think it's Jericho Sims. I think that because every time he's on the court in a big spot, he hadn't shown anything. If Mitchell Robinson for his 30 to 40 games is great, maybe 50, maybe 55, but you need to find a couple of other serviceable bodies that you can put in there with mid-level exemptions and restructuring of some certain things to try to make things happen. That's really all that the Knicks can kind of hope for. You know, they're wing heavy right now, and that's by design. They're saying we're going to try to out-Celtic the Celtics, and I get it. But you do need to have a big body in there. And Hartenstein was your best chance, I guess, as a consistent guy that could maybe suit up for 75 games as opposed to what we get from Mitchell Robinson. Kev, thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think, you know, he signed somewhere else, but, you know, an Andre Drummond type would be fine. You know, that veteran who's not going to command a big salary, who'll fit into the cap as they need be. You know, like you said, Darren, they're very wing-heavy right now with the Villanova four and a few other players. I think you're going to see some small ball lineups with Randall in the middle as well.
And Hart at the four.
With Hart at the four. Yeah. I think Achiuwa, you know, at the right price becomes a nice signing as well to give them the front court depth that they need. You know, this is a team that's going to be competitive for championship type run, and you know you're going to get a veteran big man who's going to want to have a chance to go for a ring. You know, the competition is going to be tough there in the East. We know that. You know, we know the Sixers just signed George, the Celtics just won the championship. Bucks will be there, especially with everybody back healthy next year, you think. So competition's there. I mean, it's not going to be an easy run here. Like, you know, you had a little bit of an easier run this year with some of the injuries in the playoffs. But that being said, you know, I think it's still going to be, you know, a veteran big who's going to want to have a chance to compete with a team that's going to be definitely in the playoffs, that has championship-type aspirations. That's the type of guy you're going to go get.
So, yeah. So Drummond, by the way, Kev, signed with Philly, by the way.
It was Philly,
that's
okay.
That's really well done. Thanks. Two trade targets that I saw that were posted today on the X. Utah center Walker Kessler and Charlotte Hornets center Nick Richards. Don't know how much flexibility and picks and everything else would come into play to get those guys, but I kind of agree with you. I think a veteran presence here, someone that wants to win, try to win here, and someone that you could kind of pair with Mitchell Robinson so that he's not a total train wreck health-wise and can last, you know, a good part of the season anyway. So,
yeah, I mean, you're looking for a veteran coming to give you the 20 minutes a night. That's all you need.
Yep. Yeah.
And, you know, the occasion, you know, a 5 or 10 game stretch where he has to stretch out to 30 minutes, fine. You can go small. Like I said, you can go with Chua if he's re-signed to Chua. Move Randall to the five, do things like that. You've got some depth. You just need that one more legitimate big.
I mean, with the team, the way it's constituted right now, they're going to go small a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But listen, we still need another guy in here, I get. But, you know, they're going to go small for a good portion of a lot of these games now based on what's on this roster. So, Darren?
And with the NBA not really putting a premium on bigs, there are enough bigs out there that are all about the same. And I hate to say it like that. Walker Kessler is a guy that's a little bit more offensive-minded. He's going to be able to shoot for you a little bit and stretch the defense a little bit. At the same time, you know, you get Mitchell Robinson who, you know, if it's 5 feet, it's like a little out of his range. You want to keep him within five, you know, just to make sure he can kind of make sure he hits the rim and gets everything going. You know, so it's a totally different, you know, battle that the Knicks are up against. You look at guys like that get big contracts like Clint Capella, who's nothing special, but he finds a way to get paid. That tells you the lack of big men in the league. And I'm not trying to insult Clint Capella. He just, in the day and age where we were growing up watching the NBA when we were younger, he would be a nice backup center with no real offensive game. And in this day and age, because he can dunk, you know, rebound and maybe shoot a 15-footer from time to time, he's someone that they love. So you just got to sit there and bring in the bodies and just try to figure out who's going to be able to give you that 20 to 25 a night, like Kevin said. That's really what it comes down to for the Knicks. It's early. It's you know, it's a frenzy, right? You know, all these moves happen so quickly. But like you said, you know, Boston gives Tatum the huge deal, right? And they re-sign White. And so, you know, they have all that type of stuff. And they got Brown last year. Philly gets Maxey back on a big deal. PG-13 comes in. Drummond comes in. They re-sign Oubre. You know, the Pacers re-signed Toppin, but they're going to be pretty good. Halliburton will be healthy. Mathurin comes back. Milwaukee, like you said, Kev, everybody's back. You know, the East is going to be – it's going to go from a really weak East to a very strong top five. And Spider re-signed today in Cleveland. So if they're able to find a way to get somebody around him, not to mention Banchero, who was coming on last year for Orlando, and them trying to make a move there and – you know, it's going to be like 6 or 7 halves that are going to be really fighting for jockeying for home court advantage. Not that it meant much in this year's playoffs, but you know what I mean. Jake?
So let's hit some of the big names that move. So you mentioned Paul George. He signs at Philly. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, he leaves Denver. He goes and signs with Orlando.
Another piece for Orlando.
Yep. Klay Thompson, he goes and signs with the Mavs in a trade. Sign and trade. Chris Paul signs with the Spurs. That's a 1-year contract. And Valachunas signs with Washington. Those are kind of the big guys that moved from team to team.
Well, Wiggins goes to OKC with Hartenstein also. And, you know, Clippers picked up a lot of guys. They took Derrick Jones, the kid who had a really good year in Dallas. Re-signed Batum, brought in Chris Dunn, Mo Bamba. You know, so there were a few moves like that as well. But Tobias Harris going to Detroit, trying to give them a little bit of a veteran to kind of go along with this very, very young roster. Listen, the NBA is, you know, still reeling about Bronny playing with LeBron and all the things that happened in the draft, and LeBron saying he's going to take a pay cut, which will never happen. Let's be perfectly honest. You know, and they were rumored to get Clay, and they don't get Clay, and he ends up in Dallas, and is he the missing piece, and is Dallas still the best team in the West? There's so many different variables that go on with the NBA. It's early. We got to see how it all shakes out. We got to check on injuries and all that fun stuff, but we'll see what happens. Should be a fun year, especially with the Knicks kind of feeling like you completed most of the puzzle and just a big body or two to kind of chip in to make them competitive, at least with Boston. Not saying that they're better than Boston, but be competitive with Boston.
Okay. NHL free agency started. Got some signings, some stuff moving over. So Nashville looks like it made the biggest improvements on day one. They bring in Stamkos from Tampa Bay. They bring in Marchessault from Las Vegas. They bring in Brady Shea from Carolina. Those are the big ones. Islanders bring in Anthony Duclair. They re-sign Mike Riley. San Jose in a sign and trade brings in Tyler Toffoli. Tampa Bay signed Jake Guentzel. And then we had a couple.
And they brought back Hedman today too, Tampa Bay.
Oh, okay. I must have missed that one. The Rangers in a trade brought in Riley Smith from Pittsburgh. Washington got Jacob Chychrun from Ottawa. Chris Tanev goes from Toronto to from Dallas to Toronto. Anything else, Darren? Any other signings?
Well, Islanders bring in Duclair, which was a nice move for them. As Judge goes yard yet again, by the way. Whoops. And forget it.
We'll get to him in a minute.
It's almost like a common statement right now.
Yeah, you're watching Judge go yard.
I just got the update on my phone.
You're watching Judge go yard. I was watching Alonzo go yard.
Good for Pete. Keep it going for the Mets, who are playing great, and we'll get to them more about them soon. The Rangers, the Riley Smith move is an interesting one. He's a guy that's been really good in the playoffs in his career. He's like those middle line, second or third line guy that could put the puck in the net. I just think that the Rangers felt that they didn't get much out of that first line, need a little bit more pop in the playoffs. They just got outplayed by Florida and couldn't put the offense up, and they're hoping Riley Smith could be a difference maker for that. Islanders getting a guy like Duclair, I thought, was an important move for them. He's a little younger, got a little speed. You know, it's just one of those things where you watch the Islanders, and they played well down the stretch, and they ran into a little bit of a buzzsaw with Carolina. But I thought that they, you know, what we talked about last year, and Kev, you were a big champion of it, was that this team has to get younger and has to sell and has to try to move on. And then they went on this kind of, I wouldn't call it a historic run, but they went on a really nice run. Yeah. And they were able to get themselves into the playoffs and mask some of those things. It doesn't change the fact that this team, for the most part, outside of like Horvat and, has really only got veterans out there. You know, I mean, Barzal as well. So they need a little bit more. And, I just like to see the Islanders make a few more moves. The Devils have been a little bit busy. I mean, they went out there and obviously the Markstrom trade, and then they brought in Nason from Carolina, which is a nice winger move for them. They brought in Pesci and they brought in Dylan to help on the defensive side of the puck, which is nice. They're trying to complete what they have here, so to speak.
Yep.
And, 2 years ago, this was a darling team. Last year, they fell apart. They realized that they just don't play defense and they give up too many goals. They're trying to fix that whole thing. Let's see if it all comes together. Boston bringing in Lindholm and Zadorov were both big moves. They actually brought in 8 guys. You know, so there was a lot of moves made. Chicago brings in Bertuzzi and Maroon and Brody. I mean, a lot happening. And then we had the draft last week as well. And again, we know as much about the NHL draft as we don't. But at the same time, we know a little bit. We know what we read. G, you got a point before I jump into this?
The draft being held at the Sphere in Las Vegas was simply awesome. I saw stuff from it. It looked amazing in that thing. Wow.
Well, it's just it's a state of the art venue. It's amazing. Ooh. I mean, that's what everybody's been saying about the U2 concerts and all that other stuff. So yeah. When you look at the draft,
the big problem with the draft is that, you know, okay, it's 2 days after the Stanley Cup Finals. Well, if this, like Darren, this is your point. If the finals didn't go to June 30th, or well, that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you go right from Stanley Cup Finals, Game 7, draft was like a night later, and the free agency like a day later after that. You know, it's like bang, bang, bang. And, geez, you know, how about a little time to actually have a chance to read up on some of these guys in the draft?
Yeah, let them marinate. Let the season marinate. It's exciting because then you go draft, free agency right away. The season just ended. You're trying to figure it all out. This is a winter freaking sport, and we're sitting here talking about it in July, but we're not able to talk about it the right way, and it makes it a little bit awkward. The buildup that baseball has to the free agency period, the buildup they have to the winter meetings and all these other things that happen are you know, normally you don't say this about baseball, about anything, but they're light years ahead of basketball and hockey with this. They should really be doing a little bit of a better job. Just to touch on the draft real quick, so San Jose, besides making the big move that they made with Toffoli and Wennberg, they signed Macklin Celebrini. They drafted number one, won the Hobie Baker as a freshman. You know, then they go in and at the 11, they add Sam Dickinson, who's like a pretty high-level defenseman, according to all accounts. So San Jose's trying to go from worst to competitive relatively quickly. Yep. The Islanders draft a kid named Cole Eiserman, who has, from everything I've read, the best shot in the draft. He might be the most skilled offensive player. He's just a one-way player. So the last time the Islanders drafted a guy that had this kind of – and it's not, I'm not trying to say this as a direct comparison. Last time you heard this type of rhetoric about a player was Mike Bossy. I'm not trying to say he's going to be Mike Bossy because he probably will not be. But he turned out okay. The Rangers took I'm sorry.
You know, Bossy top 1%. I mean,
I mean, you know, he's not going to get there. But if he
but my God, I mean, this is a team that needs goal scoring. I don't care if it's one way. They need a goal scorer.
They drafted a guy that they said has the best shot in the draft.
Can he put the puck in the net? That's what the Islanders desperately
He's playing
need.
On the U.S. under-8 team, and he had, what did he have, like 47 goals in 48 games, something like that. I mean, yeah. He played outstanding. The Rangers also took their kid from the U.S. under-18 team in the E.J. Emery. He's young, but he's really kind of polished. Didn't score any goals, but they say that the upside of his offensive game is there. He's going to play at North Dakota this year. And the Devils come out and they take Anton Salaev, a 6'7", huge kid that apparently is a great skater and was the number one ranked international prospect. And they compare him to Hedman. So we'll see what happens with that. Just because I'm biased, the Flames took Zane Parekh. It was a big time, apparently, offensive defenseman. I hope to God, because we haven't had a really good offensive defenseman in a long time. Giordano had one or two good years, but really, you have to go back to Al MacInnis and Gary Suter for this team to find like a real dominant offensive defenseman. So it would be nice to see if that happened. But the draft is out again. No time to let it marinate. G.
And Phoenix, who we know the Coyotes are moving to Utah next year.
Yes, they are.
Utah Hockey Club.
Utah's first draft pick, son of Jerome Iginla.
Yeah, they went with TJ Early. They went with TJ Early, who I was kind of, I guess, hoping for bloodlines to hope he fell to 9, but he did not. But you know what?
Only hope he's just as good, let me tell you.
Well, you know, listen, if he has half the heart of his father, it'll be exciting. Listen, it's early. We'll get more into hockey as the season's getting ready to get started. There'll be more moves. There's always that big rush, and then everything pulls back. And then there's a few later signings, and we'll get to those as we go. Outside of that, though, you know, hockey's, I guess, alive and well. And probably for the first time in my life, I can honestly say that Bettman might be my favorite commissioner. That's how bad the other three are.
Wow.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I hate Silver. Goodell, everybody hates. You know, it's Manfred is not really my guy. I don't know. I mean, I'm leaning toward Bettman. That's how bad the commissioners are in these sports, where Bettman that is C-minus might be the highest ranked one over the guys that are getting
these.
I love
these dead weeks here on the commissioners ranked.
I'm just saying, it's like, well, think about it. We can talk about it again. But we can sit there and talk about this. Maybe we'll ask the audience to tell us how they would rank it too. We'll do that.
There you go.
See if we can get some response that way. But
okay,
that's all I have for hockey, pal.
All right. So we're going to move over to baseball. Right now we have 8 American League teams over 500 before today. We have 6 National League teams over 500. The Mets exactly at 500 at 41-41 before today.
Trying to break that, though.
Yankees at 54-32 before today. Kev, let's talk about the Mets.
Yeah, the Mets are one out of the way from going to 42-41 with our best reliever right now in the game. I mean, they're doing this. You know, the offense is clicked for the last month.
I mean,
the month of June, they set, you know, a Mets franchise record for OPS as a team. I mean, that's how good this offense has been. And it's really, you know, besides the fact that, you know, Lindor, Nimmo, Alonso have all sort of started to progress towards what the back of the baseball card says they should be. But it's also been, you know, Vientos coming up, getting a chance to play every day, and he's got 10 home runs. And Alvarez coming back. Has the team gotten him out? The guy just hits. And he's throwing base runners out and doing a great job. He's on the field there. You feel like he's a 10-year veteran. He doesn't look like he's in his second year out there.
Well, he's the leader of this team.
He really is. I mean, if he's not the captain of the team, I don't care who they put up there. You know, Alvarez is the captain, plain and simple. He's a leader. They're getting by just enough starting pitching. You know, Manaea tonight had probably one of his best games of the year, won 7 innings. They needed that. You know, they had a little rough weekend with Houston because of the bullpen. But when you're bringing up guys like Festa and Jay and all these other guys, you know, it's tough. You know, everybody, here's Stearns. I've read some of the Mets blogs here, and Stearns is dumpster diving. We can't get relief pitchers in here, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, right now you take a look. Who's your closer? Diaz, suspended. Who's your top 8th inning guy? Raley, TJ, surgery. Drew Smith, Tommy John surgery. Sean Reed Foley, out. Adam Ottavino, ineffective. You know, go on and on. I mean, they're down to their 7th or 8th options at best. So, you know, Stearns is going to have to go out there. The way the Mets have played the last month, they're giving Stearns every reason to go out there and get a couple of relievers here on this team. That's the biggest get that they need.
Kev, I think every team has relief problems. I don't see many teams. I look at Houston when I watch those guys, and the names all make sense. They haven't been as effective this year, but you go – you know, Abreu to Presley to Hader, and you feel like that should be the best one. And you look at the stats that they put up, haven't been that tremendous either. I think that Bader, when healthy, I liked him when he was healthy with the Yankees. I think he's probably the best defensive center fielder I've seen the Mets have in a while. I think he's outstanding in that capacity. He's hitting and he's stealing bases. Alvarez, we've been talking about it for a month. He's the leader. We always knew the team was going to hit. They weren't going to hit the way they were. You never were worried about the offense. What you were worried about was the starting pitching, and you're still worried about it a little bit. Yeah. I mean, Manaea having a good start against Washington is fantastic, but you want to see how it goes in the second half of the year, much like the Yankees hitting their swoon with pitching. The Mets could be dealing with that as well. And they're going to need Quintana to become, I tell you, every week, he's got to be better. He's pitching a little bit better. He's got to be a lot better. He's got to be a guy that gives you 6 1/3, 6 2/3, maybe, dare I say, 7. I mean, for this team to be competitive, the bullpen's a train wreck. And for Diaz to be cheating already does not help the cause of his confidence going back. So you don't know if he thinks he has the stuff or not, because you remember a couple of years ago when he had no confidence when he first got here. And this is the most fragile monster closer I've ever seen in my life. This guy falls apart in a heartbeat. So even with that, and this weekend they only lost because of the pen, like you said, Kev. I mean, you know, you're going through five games, extra innings, and you know, you're putting out crap, and Houston has real pitchers. And then it's over. You can't win it. Not only just lose, they lose by five. And not only that, they cost me a hater save opportunity because I have five runs in the 10th. And fantasy baseball means a lot to me. And I can't have these wasted save opportunities because they got to put up a five spot. What the hell? Just score three and let's call it a day. What the hell? Sorry.
Well, like you said, you know, over the weekend, you know, knowing how bad the relief pitching has been, Quintana gives you four innings. And then you come back the next day with McGill with five. And it's like, have we seen enough of Tyler McGill to know he's not a starting pitcher?
I would put him in the pen right now.
Can we try him? He got sent out to Syracuse. Let's have him pitch out of the bullpen, please.
That's all I would do.
I mean, you've seen him enough over the last three, four, 5 years now. First two or three innings, he's good. He can't sustain it for more than, you know, the second time through is when all of a sudden people are like, oh, this is what he's got.
Peterson. That's how bad he is.
I mean, if his brother can be a good reliever in the major leagues, why can't he?
I agree.
And listen, you should be getting Senga back probably in two or three weeks now. He did pitch a minor league game, so.
Senga hopefully back. Scott will pitch tomorrow.
Well, the Scott big move was you knew had to happen, and that's good. He's just never pitched more than 90 innings at any level, I think, or something like that. So you know they're not going to go too deep with him, but you're going to stretch him somewhat.
That's why, you know, June, they also had a schedule where they had how many off days, you know, where they a six-man rotation didn't make sense. They put him down to AAA, and they did, you know, I think they went according to plan. They kept him on rotation, limited him to three, four innings, and this way they can stretch out, you know, his work to later in the season. Let's see if it pays off now.
Yeah. And we would be remiss if we didn't mention that it is the month of July. And if you're mentioning the month of July and you're mentioning the New York Mets, July 1st.
Happy Bobby Bonilla Day.
Because it was Bobby Bonilla Day.
it's so much more, though. There's so much more than Bobby Bonilla Day.
$1.193 million. And Kev, the good news is, after this year, there are only 11 years left.
There you go.
All right, let's move over to the Yanks. Darren, you want to talk to me about the Yankees?
But a couple points on that before we move around. Just before that, so it was also Chris Davis Day in Baltimore.
Yep.
Now Chris Davis lucky enough to make $9.16 million up through next year. Then it goes down to $3.5 million. And then from 26 to 32, and then from 33 to 37, he only gets paid 1.4. But more exciting than that to me, only because I love this, the Reds are paying Ken Griffey Jr. 3.59 this year, which makes him the fifth highest player paid on the Reds. I think that's awesome that he's the fifth highest paid player. And he's nowhere in sight. I just think that's great.
I think, you know, when you talk about Davis and you talk about Griffey, a lot of these were sort of built into the contracts too.
No doubt about it.
For payments. It wasn't like the Mets, you know, they owed Bonilla $6 million. They could have paid that off back in 2000.
But they refused. They did this instead.
Bernie Madoff is going to guarantee 10% return. So we'll invest the $6 million and we don't have that. The rest is history.
Chris Davis, I'm just saying you have three monster contracts that went on the first.
What's going to happen in 10 years when the Dodgers are paying Shohei Ohtani $40 million a year?
They're hoping the world comes to an end before that so they never have to pay him. Yeah. I have no idea. It's the craziest thing.
All right, so let's talk about the Yankees, Darren. You want to talk Aaron Judge first?
Well, the thing about the Yankees that's so exciting is that they have not only been losing a lot, but they've been uncompetitive in most of the losses. They don't lose. They get blown out. They get blown out early with bad pitching, and it's been really suspect. Even Hill didn't really have it tonight. It wasn't awful, but he wasn't really good. You know, Rodon got shelled last time out. I know he stayed in and battled, but it didn't matter. He gave up seven runs or whatever it was. Nestor didn't have it in his start. I mean, it's like they're just not getting the consistency right now from all the guys. Cole actually came out and threw a good game. Kev?
So with Hill, how much is your level of concern now that it's three straight starts where he's not looked good?
No, I just, to be honest with you, I think that the league is figuring Hill out and Hill has to now learn how to pitch. I don't worry about it as much. I just think that, you know, this stuff happens to guys. They go through that lineup and each team once, and all of a sudden the scouting report comes around. And if you miss spots just a little bit in this league, there are some really good hitters out here that are going to turn that and make it deep. I'm not that concerned yet. Fact is that, you know, I need him to be good, but he was starting the season as my fifth starter. He elevated really early on. If he ends the season and he's still competent as a fifth starter, I can live with it. But like I said, tonight wasn't his best, but don't get me wrong. But he went four innings, two hits, four earned runs. He walked three, struck out three. So the free passes are what hurt him tonight, to be honest with you. You know, it wasn't like he was getting hit hard. He just wasn't locating like he should. So now as he figures out how to pitch, it'll be a little bit better. G, you feel anything different than what I feel on that one?
No. And honestly, I think the addition of Cole being back in the rotation now helps. Maybe it takes a little pressure off the kid a little bit. And we can hopefully, if this is any prolonged, you know, if he has another couple of starts that are bad, we can kind of maybe, you know, stretch it out a little bit with Cole being back now in this rotation. So,
no, I agree with you, pal. I do. The other thing I'll say is that when you look at the Yankee team right now, Judge is the best player in the world. And I heard this from someone else, so it's not my line, but people are talking about how he's almost reaching Bonds status now, where it's to the point where the bases were loaded against the Mets last week, and there was thoughts of walking him up six, and he hit the grand slam. I mean, the Mets won the game 9-7, but at the same point in time, there were thoughts. I mean, and how often do you think of that with any player outside of Bonds?
I tell you, if he was a tying run, that situation.
He was tying run, he never would have saw a pitch. I mean, I agree with you, Kev. But even up six, you're fine throwing a strike. Talking about doing it.
Yeah.
G?
So, Bryce Harper, 2021 MVP season. Kev, you know exactly where I'm going with this, right?
I've seen this too, yep.
So I'll give you some – I have a lot of stats, but I'll give you some stuff. So Harper in his MVP season hit 309 through June 30th. Judge was at 316. Harper hit 35 home runs, and Harper played 141 games, 488 at-bats, 599 plate appearances. Judge has only played 64 games, 301 at-bats, 370 plate appearances. Harper, 35 home runs. Judge, 31. Harper had 84 RBIs. Judge has 82. 101 runs for Harper, 65 for Judge. I mean, the numbers are just out of control. And listen, the home runs is one thing. The RBIs is ridiculous. I mean, Harper had 84 RBIs that year. Judge has 82 before today and hit another one today. So he's got 83. So
I think he drove in a run earlier in the game also. I think he had two ribbies tonight. I might be wrong.
So he's got 84. So he's already tied.
I'll double check that. But yeah, he's been.
He
scored two runs, only drove in one. My mistake. Okay. I apologize.
Right. So, I mean, the numbers are insane. You know, on base, he's at 436. His slug's 708. His OPS is 1144. I mean, the numbers are just unbelievable right now. I don't know where to put him in any of these classes right now. He's so far and away right now the best hitter in the game at this moment that it's just unbelievable. I mean, his power is just ridiculous right now.
And he was hitting like crap until he got ejected.
Yeah.
His first ever ejection.
That was it.
But you know what's funny? I mean, and we talk about Jeter, and I'm a Yankee fan, and we revere Jeter, and yesterday was the anniversary of the game where he made the play against Boston, went to the stands, banged his face up and all that other stuff. May not have been the greatest catch of all time, but it was the greatest, you know, not caring about your body afterwards, or one of them, that you'll ever see.
The greatest dive into the foul territory stands.
And he all cut up and bruised up. But the fact of the matter is that what Judge did last week to Stroman during a play against Toronto had a fit because Gleyber didn't turn a double play fast enough. And he was right. I mean, let's be honest, every day is Glaber Day, but Glaber's lazy on some of those Glaber days. Yep. And he started, you know, he made it visibly known. And Judge takes him aside in the dugout, and he basically says, where the cameras can see him, we don't do that here. That's something I've never seen Jeter do. I maybe he did it in private, but Judge not only is producing on the field, and I'm not trying to say he's better than Jeter. They're different players. You can't even compare what they do. But Judge plays center field every day. Freaking guy plays center field every day. He's not in right field, showcasing the right arm. You know, he runs the bases like a champion, hustles, never shows up a pitcher, gets hit by a pitch in a retaliation, doesn't even flinch about it. And when a player on his team doesn't act the Yankee way, which pisses off everybody else on the planet, he calls them out. And you know what? I got to tell you, Judge as a captain is probably the best captain this team's had since, I would say, Thurman with that leadership. And we were kind of young with Thurman, but we did see some of that when he had to deal with Reggie and all the other stuff, and actually fought with Reggie too. But at the same time, it's really cool to see. He's not only this amazing offensive player, but he's truly the leader of the Yankees.
Yep.
And I think that the team is in great shape for a long time because now they just got to start consistently winning again. Baseball is such a long season. Everybody overreacts to everything. They're having a couple of tough weeks. They'll rebound. They'll win 6 or 7 somewhere. They'll go on a 5-game winning streak. You know, just like the Mets right now are tearing it up. And then the Mets will lose 4 out of 5 somewhere down the line in July or August. And everybody starts, and then all of a sudden they'll come back and the offense will start clicking again. You know, hopefully. And the reason why people think Stearns is a dumpster diver, because that's what he did in the offseason. Stearns sat there and he went low rent on everybody because they already have the highest payroll in baseball. How much higher are they supposed to go, right? So that's why he did it, even though everybody's criticizing him. And, you know, once these contracts come off, I think that we'll see if he's a small market GM or if he knows how to handle New York. He's trying to build the farm system. Again, I'm not a Met guy. I'm a Yankee guy. But let's give Stearns a chance. Let's see what he can do. Milwaukee, losing everybody, is still looking pretty solid, in my opinion.
He had one off season where he was, you know, going wasn't going to add to the payroll unless it was Ohtani.
Yep.
And once he didn't get Ohtani, he was like, all right, we're going to make sure you get, you know, contributors like, you know, Bader and Severino have turned out to be terrific signings.
Excellent signings.
You know, some of the other ones haven't worked out. You know, it's a 50-50.
Yep.
And, you know, we knew going in, we all said preseason, you know, the starting rotation was going to be the question mark, and it's been.
We were right.
We were actually right. So the Mets bullpen, I know it's bad. Yankee bullpen, I know you're no lover of Clay Holmes, but I look at some of the other names on here. Like,
I love him in the eighth inning.
Phil Bickford. Caleb Ferguson. Luke Weaver. I had to look up Jake Cousins. I had to look him up.
Well, Weaver's actually been pretty good. I can't pick on Luke Weaver.
Oh my God,
very much. He's probably been the best one besides Holmes. No, I know. It's not a good bullpen. You know, you expect Canely to give you something. Marinaccio has not progressed at all. He showed a little sign a couple of years ago, and he hasn't shown anything since. You know, they had a chance to get a real closer, and they didn't, and it hurts. Yep. And now we're going to sit there in a big spot with Clay Holmes in a game in the playoffs, and I'm going to be down to cuticles in about like 4 seconds, because that's how brutal it is watching a guy that can't strike people out have to come in the ninth inning. It's like watching John Franco. You can't do it. You just don't want to do it. You know, you pray you never have to do it. That's what it comes down to.
All right. Any other points around baseball?
Just a few fun stats for everybody, because it's always fun. So when we talk about, let's start with the hitting, okay? So there are still only 3 guys with the over 1,000 OPS. So and Judge is way ahead. Ohtani has gotten there, and Soto's still there. The guy that leads the major leagues in hitting going into tonight, Luis Ranjifo, hitting .317. 1 point ahead of Judge, or he would have the Triple Crown at this moment right now. Just pointing that out. Arias and Profar, another two guys you don't necessarily, well, you expect Arias to hit. They're 4-5. Judge and Ohtani are 1 point behind Renjifo. Yeah.
So 317 leads Major League Baseball in batting average.
You got it, pal, for people that are qualified.
I thought eliminating the shift was going to raise everybody's batting average 20 points.
Gino told me that.
It did.
If 317 leads Major Leagues, that's awful.
It still has, though.
So, Gino, just to keep in line with what you and Kevin are talking about.
Do we need to go through a statistical analysis where we talk about the mean, Kev?
We'll have to talk about that.
Well, while we're on that, let's have a little fun with this. So just a couple of great stat lines. Mitch Garver, you know, had a great playoff. 172, 10 homers, 31 ribbies. Nolan Gorman hit another homer tonight, by the way, hitting 187, now with 17 homers and 40 ribbies. Wow. Will Benson hit a homer tonight also, hitting 190 with 8-26. Suarez, 196 with 6-32. Arozarena, everybody drafted him high in your fantasy league, 196 with 11-28. Varsho, everybody loved him last year because he could catch too, 197 with 11-35. And then Christoph Morel, 198 with 15-45. But then you get to the good side of baseball pitching.
Where's Joey Gallo?
If you're over 200, Joey Gallo numbers. You gotta have the enough amount of at bats, my friend. Just a couple of interesting great pitching performances so far. Ronel Blanco, it's 8-3 with a 249 ERA, a WHIP of 101, batting average against 171. Tyler Glasnow, 8-5 with a 323 ERA and a WHIP of 0.93. He's got 136 Ks in 103 innings, batting 186 against them. Zach Wheeler be third in this category. He's 9-4 with a 273 ERA, a WHIP of 0.98. People are hitting 193 against him. Lugo still leads the league in wins. Mets didn't need him, neither did the Padres. 11-2 with a 217 ERA, 1.03 WHIP. Garrett Crochet, 141 Ks in 101 innings. And then we get to the fun stuff. I'm going to ask you a question, okay? I'm going to compare two guys, Patrick Corbin and Logan Allen, okay? Patrick Corbin, the Major League Baseball is hitting 301 against Patrick Corbin. Logan, he's got a 5.49 ERA and a 1.53 WHIP. Logan Allen, people are hitting 297 against him. ERA of 575 and a WHIP of 154. Do you know the records of these two guys?
You're going to tell me they have winning records?
Nah, one of them does, though. So Patrick Corbin is 1-8 and somehow still gets to stay in the rotation. He started 17 games. Logan Allen is 8-4. To talk about how important it is on what team you play for and how well they hit when you pitch, I mean, you could actually argue that Corbin has been better than Allen. His WHIP is better. His ERA is better, and the batting average only slightly worse. They're hitting 297 against Allen, against 301 against Corbin. But this is how bad these two guys are, and they both have started 17 games. I mean, Logan, no one thought to pull either one of these two idiots.
Logan Allen has 8 wins with those numbers.
Yeah, 8 wins.
Didn't Jacob DeGrom with a win a Cy Young with 8 wins?
He did.
We're pretty damn close.
It was under 10. He didn't get double digits. Wow. Craziness. I just thought that those two things stood out to me. That's all I have for baseball. I'll pass it back to you, Jake.
Do you have Suarez?
What?
Eugenio, do you have Ranger Suarez? Suarez?
Oh, Ranger? Well, yeah. He's 10-2.
183 ERA.
Yep, he's been great.
He's got 99 strikeouts and 19 walks.
He's been unbelievable in that respect. Yeah. He really has been.
And you know, the other baseball point I had was Major League Baseball changed the home run derby this year. So each round that the batters are only going to face a maximum of 40 pitches, no matter what they do with them. So puts a little bit more efficiency. They can't just take pitch after pitch after pitch and wait for something. They're only going to get 40 pitches. So just a little interesting note.
Absolutely interesting.
All right. So baseball, we'll see what the Yanks and Mets do. Trade deadline, still a ways away, so we got plenty of time to get into that stuff as we get closer. Let's talk about some soccer, Darren.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I get gripped to this stuff. I'm an Olympics guy. Also, I'm a World Cup guy, watching Euro, watching Copa America. So last night, you know, I get your work day over with, and you go home to sit down and watch one of the most important games in the United States in a long time against Uruguay, who's, you know, listen, Uruguay's always good. Listen, when you think of South American soccer, you think Brazil, you think Argentina, right? Argentina, defending champs, and then everybody else. But Uruguay, Colombia has some good years. Paraguay, when they had Chilever playing goal, you know, they've had moments. Ecuador's had moments and stuff like that. Uruguay's been consistently really good, though, all these years. They always have Diego Forlan, Suarez, all these great players. So you go in and you get all excited about watching this game. And the U.S., you get the worst camera angle of all time, right? They can't figure it out that nobody wants to watch from the overhead screen. And you want to watch and see what's going on, you know, at field level. I mean, I've watched enough Chief games to know that you can watch a game from field level. So it's not the stadium, all right? I know this from my NFL experience. So I have to watch this stupid game from the overhead. And I'm saying, what are they doing? This first 5 minutes to show us something different like they do in other sports? But no, they kept it the whole freaking game. So that's all right. So this is the way we have to watch it. And they kind of apologize for it. Stu Holden's just sitting there saying, you know, listen, we didn't choose this. This is the way it is, whatever. You know, okay. So you're watching it. And the U.S. came out and they played pretty well. They were kind of controlling it, making nice plays. But the simple fact of the matter is you're in a must-win game and you don't score a goal. Refereeing horrendous. I mean, he goes to give a yellow card. They quick kick it. He doesn't stop play. It took Tim Ream to make an amazing play to probably save a goal. The amount of things that happened in this game were beyond. I mean, a yellow card on Adams where he didn't even touch him. I mean, it's like, you know, you didn't know what you were watching. But the simple fact is that this is supposed to be the golden time of American soccer, and they don't beat anybody good ever. Yes, Tim Ream shouldn't get a red card. Fastest since 2010 in an international game where they're playing shorthanded for 78 minutes because you had hit someone in the freaking head. And they should have beat Panama. They probably would have beat Panama if Ream doesn't do that and they play 11-on-11. But it doesn't matter. They did do that. They took a 1-0 lead and they gave it right back. Berhalter's got to go. He's 0-5. He's 0-5 against top 20 teams. He doesn't beat anybody good. Yeah, I love that we can handle El Salvador in a tough game in freaking August. I need to beat Uruguay to advance out of the group stage of Copa America. What the hell is going on here? I mean, listen, the red card dumb in the Panama game. I get all this stuff. But they didn't even muster shots last night. Yeah. They couldn't get shots off. And, you know, Pulisic looks like he's the best player on the field for part of it, but then it looks like he's not even looking for teammates and he's just running around by himself trying to make amazing plays. We just don't play smart soccer. That's what it comes down to. Kev, thoughts?
You're playing Copa America in the U.S. at home and you can't advance past the group stage? Embarrassing. Berhalter's got to go. And, you know, the problem with U.S. soccer is right now they're so, like, insulated. They're not going to think outside the box. They're not going to go out there and look for – I don't think they're going to go out there and if they do fire Berhalter, I'm afraid they're going to keep it to, you know, oh, this guy's got ties to the U.S. team right now. They're not going to go think it outside the box and try to bring in a big name from somewhere.
Go to England. I mean, get me somebody. Go to France. Go to Germany.
I'm trying to remember the big name in England who is probably out. One of the coaches there is under the gun. I don't know if it's Ten Hag or one of those guys. You know, like I said, I'm drawing a blank on the name, but there's somebody over there that's like, you know, in English soccer, he's a bum because, you know, he's not winning top level. He's not winning the Premier League, but his teams are always good. And, you know, if he comes to coach the U.S. team, he'd be a god compared to what we've done as coaching. And like I said, I wish I could remember the guy's name.
No, I got you. I remember when Klinsmann came over. It was a nice move when they brought in Jurgen Klinsmann. It didn't work, but they were competitive. They got into the World Cup. I mean, they you know, but at least they were thinking outside the box for the first time. They brought in a German star.
Yeah. That's what I want. Where he's outside the box thinking.
I mean, you sit there, you watch these other countries, and you know, I think it's Costa Rica. They got a guy from Denmark coaching. I mean, you know, everybody's got somebody, you know, all over the place. They don't really care. I mean, what we need to do is find the best coach that's going to get more out of this team and come up with some better systems. That's really what it comes down to. It was embarrassing to not get past Bolivia, who, by the way, if you watch any second of Bolivia, they have no offensive clue whatsoever. Tells you how bad Peru must have been that they qualified over them. Usually Peru has been decent, I thought, recently. And then you sit there and you look at it, and Panama is a team that you should beat. And yeah. I know you lost 2-1, but you can't lose that game. And then you have to beat Uruguay, who's better than you. Even though you're ranked 11 and they're 15, Uruguay wins. Uruguay is always freaking good. I mean, it's a small country that produces great soccer players. I don't know what else to say about it. You know, and that's kind of what happens. Mexico out, U.S. out. Right now, the only two North American teams that are advancing into the next round, into the knockout stage, are Canada, who so far scored one goal in their games, and Panama. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, it's dominated by South America. You'd expect it, but you'd hope U.S. would be a part of it. You'd expect Mexico to be a part of it. Disappointment from North America completely. Just brutal. CONCACAF embarrassed themselves.
Yep. The other tournament going on is Euro 2024. Just a couple of notes. Last time this was held was in 2021. Italy wound up winning. They played in 2021 because of the 2020 COVID. It's every 4 years. Right now, Germany is the host nation. They're down to 8.
Yep.
Spain plays Germany, and Portugal plays France. And Netherlands will play Turkey, and England will play Switzerland. That is the round of 8 that'll happen in the next couple of days. So, Darren?
Yeah, just Kevin? A couple of quick things. Really no upsets in this. Maybe Turkey over Austria being the only real upset in this round. But the Portugal game against Slovenia was unbelievable. It goes 0-0. Ronaldo gets a shot at a penalty kick and it gets saved. You see him crying on the pitch. He lost it because he missed it. Then a few minutes later, Slovenia has a breakaway. And Diogo Costa makes a save. They keep it 0-0. They go to kicks. And I'm sure it's happened a million times. I've never seen it. Diogo Costa saved all 3 shots at him. So they won 3-0 on 3 shots. I've never seen it where the team didn't score. I never watched one where nobody on the offensive team scored for Slovenia in the kicks. Just one great save after another. Just great, great soccer. And, Portugal against England will be interesting. England was left for dead against Slovakia. 95th minute. I mean, my God, the kick by Bellingham. It's a Pele bicycle kick.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? Go ahead, Kev. I didn't mean to cut you off. You're going to talk about it. Go ahead.
I was going to say that was an incredible play. I mean, England was, according to the announcers, down to their last sip in this game. I tell you, listen if you can, your soccer announcers, especially the English guys. My God, there's no better announcers than Englishmen announcing soccer games.
and you watch the pre beforehand. And Schmeichel, who's the goalie on Denmark, his father, who was a great goaltender for Denmark as well, is doing these games. And they show him watching the Denmark games and in the group stage where they're winning. And you see him just like sweating and then relieved at the end, watching his son, watching his native country. It really is pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
Going
back to the game, England was down, last minute or two of added time. And Bellingham, that bicycle kick was just a thing of beauty. England was putting all sorts of pressure on. They finally got the goal. Then they go into the 30-minute extra time. We would call it overtime, but they call it extra time in soccer terms. And Harry Kane scored the first minute of overtime there, and England held on to win 2-1 to advance. I mean, just an incredible comeback for England.
Oh yeah, I mean, watching Gareth Southgate on the sideline, he looked like he was going to dig himself a hole, and all of a sudden he's just jubilant, and it was great. And the same thing, you know, you watch France and Belgium. France scores in the 87th minute to win it 1-0. This is teams 2 and 3 in the world going up against each other in the freaking, you know, not even the quarters. This is in the round of 16, and you got teams 2 and 3 ranked in the world playing each other, the top teams in Europe, just behind Argentina. And, you know, so you had some really great soccer. Listen, the amount of passion, the amount of love for the sport, the crowds, really, really fun to watch. And if you get a chance to get into it, it really is. It's much more fun than you give it credit for if you haven't watched it. There's a lot of excitement that goes on.
At the national team level, it's incredible. I mean, mm-hmm. more and more, you know, as these tournaments from around the world get played and televised here in the U.S., I mean, it's so easy to get into. You get hooked onto it. You hear the crowds. And then if you're, you know, we're here in New York. If you have a chance, I've been to a couple of Red Bull games. I'm sure NYCFC would be the same thing. I mean, just like in Europe, you know, I go to Red Bull Arena. They're singing and chanting for the entire game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's incredible. I mean, if you can't enjoy that atmosphere, I mean, yeah. Something, I mean, it's really what sports was, you know, when we were growing up.
Yeah. It's just a lot of fun. And it was nice last night. They haven't always done it, seeing almost the entire team singing the national anthem, because you watch every other team in Copa America and in Europe, and they're all belting it out like it's the greatest thing in the world. And you see Americans that look down and look away. It was nice to see them belting it last night. It was pretty cool. One last point, and I meant to touch on this with the Portugal game against Slovenia. So after the miss penalty kick by Ronaldo, where he was just crying, there was a breakdown defensively by Pepe, who's been there forever. He's 41 years old, still playing at this level, but he mishit and gave up a breakaway. And Diogo Costa, who just was amazing in the entire match, you know, especially in the penalty kicks and stuff, saved his butt, so to speak. But, you know, you see the crowd go up and down with every single moment. And that's one of the things that's kind of exciting about it. It's kind of like hockey, is what I was about to say. The fact that every single push and every single move, if you score, it becomes such a big deal. And there's something really exciting about that. So anyway, soccer alive and well, except in the United States where we suck. Back to you, G.
Any other points? I have one other point, and that is at Wimbledon, the 2023 women's champion was eliminated in the first round. Marqueta Vandarosa, she loses in the first round, and it's the first time it's happened since 1994 that the Wimbledon champion was knocked out in the first round. So just a little
Wimbledon started already?
Little tennis nugget, yes.
Wow.
I was not aware of that tennis nugget. Very cool. Anything else for you, Kev?
I didn't know Wimbledon was starting already.
Absolutely. It's
always alive and well on the grass. Well.
Yeah.
Boys, any other points before we wrap it up?
No.
Okay. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Gino, here with Kevin, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A world of sports where we need Aaron Judge to keep hitting home runs, and we need Greg Berhalter to step aside and find a new damn coach to get the United States into the group, past the group stage of freaking soccer. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, whatever you like. You know, we share a lot on social media. Please respond, share back. If we ask you a question, don't just like it. Respond. Tell us what you think. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.